Hello, hello, and welcome to Read It With Whiskey. My name is Laura Gentinen, and I am your host and the self-published author of the Shockwave series. So if you missed my Laura J. Live update last week, definitely go back to that episode with A.L. Hook and continue on to the Laura J. Live update that is coming up next. In the Laura J. Live updates from last week and this week, I go into detail about the progress I am making or not so much making on the Shockwave series, so stay tuned. But this episode is all about someone incredible, Sasha Black. So let me tell you a little bit about Sasha. Sasha Black has five obsessions: words, expensive shoes, conspiracy theories, self-improvement, and breaking the rules. She also has the mind of a perpetual 16-year-old, only with slightly less drama and slightly more bills. Sasha writes books about people with magical powers and other books about the art of writing. She lives in Cambridgeshire, England, with her wife and genius giant of a son. When she's not writing, she can be found laughing inappropriately loud, blogging, sniffing musty old books, fangirling film and TV soundtracks, or thinking up new ways to break the rules. Sasha is incredible. I had so much fun talking to her, and we dive into her book, Keepers, which is the first of three. Keepers is book one, then we have Victor, and then the final book is going to be coming out very, very soon. I'll give you more updates about that later on. But Keepers, let's talk about it. What if your enemy was your soulmate? 17-year-old Eden East lives in a world ruled by fate. And as the heir to the ruling elementals, her fate is bound to the odious son of their enemies, the Shifters. Unwilling to accept her destiny, Eden rebels and unearths dark secrets. Then Trey Lucelli appears, a blue-eyed siren who seems strangely familiar. The more Eden tries to ignore him, the more they are drawn together. Just as the web of lies begins to unravel, Eden's parents are brutally murdered. Convinced it's all connected, Eden must work with Trey to discover the truth and save themselves from the Shifters. But the path to answers is fraught with betrayal and danger. The closer they get, the darker the lies, and the more Eden questions everything she's ever known. Perhaps some secrets are better left buried. This was such a fun book to read, and I cannot wait to dive into book two, Victor. Let's dive into this episode with Sasha Black. Welcome to Read It With Whiskey, the interview podcast featuring science fiction and fantasy authors. My name is Laura Gentinen, your host and the author of the Shockwave series. I am also a book club moderator, speaker, and avid reader, truly invested in every author's story. Within this podcast, I bring to you, the reader, all the behind-the-scenes secrets to how these guest indie authors bring their books into the world. If you are a sci-fi fantasy reader, then you need to hear from these authors. Let's learn about the person behind the page. Sit back, sip some whiskey, and lean in to these self-published authors. Hello, hello, hello. This is your little Laura J. Live update, and we are live again, giving you a more up-to-date update than we had in October and November. So it is the 21st of December as this episode goes out. And from last week's episode, you know that I'm still working on Static Equilibrium. And that is still the case. I'm still working on it now. I am hoping to get the entire first draft done before the new year. And if I get that entire first draft complete, then I'll be able to dive into editing with the new year, all of that new energy and excitement coming in and setting resolutions, all that stuff. Hopefully that'll give me a little bit of a push to get Static Equilibrium edited and ready to go, because I'm hoping to get that book published in April. I haven't announced an actual date yet, but it is very, very soon. So I'm still working on that, still plugging away. In other news with Laura J. Live, I also have my Creative Entrepreneur series, the hashtag series for creative entrepreneurs, and the first two books are already out. That is hashtag Me Time, Avoiding Burnout, and hashtag We Time, Gaining Freedom. And the third and final installment of this series, hashtag Work Time, Networking Growth, is going to be published on the 30th of December, 2021. So if you are a creative entrepreneur, if you are an author, a podcaster, a YouTuber, if you create crafts for Etsy, if you do any type of music or artwork, anything within the creative entrepreneurial world, then this series is really going to help you because it helps you learn how to avoid that burnout as a creative, how to gain freedom from your business so you can live your life, and also how to use networking to grow your business more authentically. If you are a reader and you do not have a creative business, you can still gain a lot from this series. And it is really, really small, really short, but it's good to just have these tactics in the bag because they're so simple. They don't take a lot of time to learn. These are all novellas. So they're all under 15,000 words. You can read them in an afternoon. And the ideas from this book help so much more, so many more people than just creative entrepreneurs. But those are the people who I'm specifically marketing to. But if you are a reader and you have read my other work in nonfiction, then definitely dive into it because you might find that some of these tips will help you too. So if you want to learn more about any of my work, the nonfiction, fiction, anything like that, you can hop over to my website, www.laurajlive.com. And that's J spelled out, J-A-Y. So LaurajayLive.com. And there you can find all of the books that I have written, a couple upcoming projects. I try to do little sneak peeks more so on Patreon, but I do have the book cover for book 3 up on my website already. Even though I haven't put it out anywhere else, I put it on there because if you visit my website, then I want to give you a little reward. So you can see the title cover for Static Equilibrium, which is coming out hopefully in April 2022. So that's my little Laura J. Live update for this week. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas, everybody. I hope you guys have an amazing end to your year. And we'll come back next time for another Laura J. Live update in the new year. Hello, Sasha Black, and welcome to Read It With Whiskey. How are you doing today?
I am good. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's lovely to meet you in person, virtually in person.
Computer screen to computer screen. Yeah. I know. It's so exciting to meet you. I've been following you for a while and I realized that you had a young adult series, young adult fiction, fantasy, because I had known you through your author helping books. And so that's how I originally found you. And so when I found out that you had fiction, I was like, okay, I'm jumping on this. I'm getting her on the podcast. So I'm so excited to have you here. So tell our listeners, why did you originally want to become a writer?
Well, it's such a, I think if I had been slightly more self-aware, then I probably would have realized I wanted to be a writer a lot sooner than I actually did. I was one of those children who always carried a notebook. I read so many books as a kid that like the little tiny village library that we had, I'd read everything, literally everything. So my mum had to take me to the town library. I also would devour everything on, we had these little mobile truck library things. I don't know if you guys have them, but anyway, we had them because they would visit all of the little tiny villages where there were kiddos that couldn't get to the big libraries or whatever. And of course I read all of those books too. And, we sort of talk about it fondly now, me and my mum, about how, she would tear her hair out trying to find books, more books for me. I've always been a prolific reader. And I think those who are naturally inclined to be prolific readers do tend to have that sort of, that they favour story writing and storytelling as well. And it's funny because I haven't kept a lot of work from school from when I was a kid, but one of the things I do still have is like the very first story that I wrote where I was like, oh, I really enjoy writing stories. So like, I'm sure I have rafts of other shit that was, terrible. But, and also to be fair, this story is also terrible. But, I look at it and I'm like, oh yeah, that is the moment. Like that is the moment that I knew that storytelling was something that I wanted. And it's funny because I have never, ever forgotten that teacher, that English teacher. And I always think that those people who are creative tend to have that one special teacher who saw the spark in them. And I actually reached out and contacted that teacher really recently, like literally a month ago, and they still remembered me and was so happy happy. Yeah, because this is obviously my English teacher. They were so happy that I had continued storytelling. Anyway, so roll on a few years, and my mum is very sensible and quite conservative, and, you know, really encouraged me. She never, ever dissuaded me from creativity, but she also worried a lot and wanted me to have some kind of a backup. So instead of going and doing English at uni or creative writing, I went and did psychology, and I did a master's and nearly did a PhD, and then went into the corporate world to get a proper sensible job. And very, very quickly, I would say within 6 months, suffered depression, and I was miserable, and went into some very dark places. And I found blogging. And from blogging, I found flash fiction. And from flash fiction, I found NaNoWriMo. And from NaNoWriMo, I never really looked back. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know that I've really answered the why, but I think the journey of how explains the why. You know, it's always been there. It's been that seed inside me, you know, and I've done so many other creative things over the years, searching for that one creative thing that I wanted to do. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was a soul searching journey, trying to find, okay, where does my heart want to be? What is that passion project that I want to be working on all the time? Exactly. And you found it. You have been doing a lot of different creative things. So tell us, what do you do on a regular basis? Like, what does a day-to-day look like for you in the creative field?
Well, oh my goodness me. I mean, I'm a full-time author. So, well, I say full-time author. I think there are so many different definitions of what full-time author mean. Mm-hmm. I work for myself. So, but within that, I have, you know, a bazillion different income streams, and I like it that way, and I wouldn't change it. I can't be one of these rapid release authors that just sits for 10 hours a day writing, because I think I'd lose my mind. And also, yeah, I would burn out as well. So, I mean, what does my day-to-day look like? Some days I am dealing with data and advertising and, you know, Amazon ads or BookBub ads. Other days I'm drafting. Other days I'm editing. Some days I'm creating presentations for talks that I do. Other days I'm doing interviews like this, or I'm podcasting, or I've just finished narrating my first audiobook. So, you know, I spent quite a while narrating in a sound booth that we created. What else? I think this is one of the wonderful things, you know, and actually I do quite a lot of research as well. So like other days I'll go on research trips and I'll be in some giant castle or whatever, I don't know, visiting an underground derelict train station or something crazy. So yeah, like no 2 days are the same. You know, I work in this office primarily. Sometimes I work in a coffee shop, but you know, the vast majority of the time my ass is in this chair and I am typing on the computer in some format or another.
Yeah.
I'm judging the Amazon Kindle Storyteller competition tomorrow. So like, that's a completely different day.
Yeah. So exciting. I heard about that. That's super exciting. What all went into planning for that? I wasn't even planning on asking you about this, but let's go on ahead. How did that come about, and what do you expect from it?
I do some freelance work for the Alliance of Independent Authors, and they always have a representative that sits on the judging panel. So they nominated me to go on the judging panel. So yeah, I had to read 5 books in about 3 weeks. And yeah, so I read those books. And then tomorrow we have like the judging panel where there's the previous winner, some Amazon representatives, me. Yeah, we all collectively come to a conclusion. So it's really interesting because it teaches you what good storytelling is, mm-hmm. what bad storytelling is, what you do and don't like, and how to capture, I think, a reader's attention. So yeah, even though it's been quite a lot of work to get all the books read in and around the other stuff I read, it's well worth it from a learning perspective, I think.
Definitely. Yeah, that's super exciting. I actually listened to your episode on your podcast when you talked about that with the representative from Amazon. So, that was a fun episode. Okay. So let's dive into a little bit of what books you have written. So how many books do you have published currently?
So I saw this question and was like, I don't actually know. So I have 4 textbooks, which are writing craft, and 4 workbooks that go with them. So that's 8. I've co-written 2 writing related books with Jay Thorne, so that's 10. And then I've got I've box set 3 of them. So that's 13. I just haven't done the other one. And then I've got 2 fiction books published. So that's 15, I would say. I mean, say 12 to 15, because the box sets are obviously like duplications, but they are additional products that I had to work on to get
very
out.
Cool. So, yeah. So did you start in the fiction world or did you start in the nonfiction world?
Well, I started writing fiction and then I published nonfiction first because it was just harder to get it done. Yeah. So I, yeah, technically I published nonfiction first, but I started writing fiction.
Okay, cool. That.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about Keepers today. So this is a 3-part series. 2 of them are published. 1 is coming out in the spring. So tell us, what is Keepers all about? Give us a little synopsis.
So Keepers is like this guilty pleasure, teen forbidden love fantasy. I think it's technically called a portal fantasy. I don't know if that, I never understand quite the terms. It's sort of steampunk inspired. I wouldn't say it's a steampunk story, but it's definitely steampunk inspired. And it's all about this world controlled by fate and, you know, these people, humans essentially with additional powers who are put in the world to look after humans and their fate and their own fate. And basically there has been some backhanded dealings between their deities and their sisters. So there's 2 sisters, a sister of light and a sister of darkness. And yeah, and basically there's been some underhanded stuff, which is all going to culminate in like a whopping battle, as most of these young adult things do. And there's murders, there's like a backwards love triangle. So like there's a second character who wants a relationship and is never going to get one. And yeah, this forbidden romance, and there's a bit of sass in there, a couple of diva characters in there. But yeah, like it's just basically pure guilty pleasure teen reading. Like there's it's not like literary fiction or anything like that. It's just like a proper quick read, I reckon.
No, it is a very quick read too, because I think I read it in maybe like a day and a half, 2 days. I just sprinted through it, and it was easy to sprint through because it was easy reading and everything just flowed really nicely. And I like that the chapters were relatively like medium in length, medium to short. I like when chapters are a little bit shorter because you can just kind of flip through. I feel like I'm more productive when I can get through more chapters. Mm-hmm. But I really liked this story. So where did this inspiration for this story come from? Because there are so many different things in play. There's different realms, there's magic systems, the whole world building process. We can dive into that too. Where was the inspiration from?
Quite a few different places. Like I'm really proud of this book because it's the first book I ever wrote, but I definitely think I maybe tried to put too much in there. And, you know, I think that's what a lot of us do when it's, you know, our very first book and our very first series. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, I tried to do it like back then to the best of my ability. So I'm still super proud of what this book came out. So there is a oriental city, a walled city called Kowloon Walled City. And it's basically locked off to outsiders and it's lawless. So there's no law in this city. And it's like on the outskirts. And they basically built up. So they've just continued to build up and build up and build up and build up until they've got this giant walled city with no law. And I was just absolutely fascinated by it. And if I ever get to go to China, I'm definitely going to go and at least from the outside view this city. I don't think anybody is safe for anybody to go in, but no. Anyway, yeah. And so that's kind of where the idea for the East came from. This book is very, very much inspired by location. So I went and trekked through the Himalayas and trekked up to Mount Everest base camp. So that is the setting, really very inspired for the North and the Eris Mountains. And then the West the world is broken down by like these different states. And so the West is very much inspired by a childhood village that I lived in called Ashton. And it's this very quaint British bungalow, thatched houses, you know, very quintessentially British. And then like I had this very bizarre childhood where like we were quite poor, but actually I had some very wealthy relatives, one of whom owned this village that we lived in and a mansion. And so like a lot of the South is inspired by these mansions and ridiculous houses that, you know,
we had no money, and my school kit came from a charity, but also we had dinner in this mansion and lived in the mansion for a bit, and like all this craziness. So yeah, like each place is really inspired by that. And then sort of the East being set in the desert, my grandmother lives in Jerusalem, and I had this very influential, I want to say, trip to Israel where we drove through the desert. I still remember like winding down the window and sticking my head out, expecting it to be cool air because the car was so damn hot. And I nearly choked. I literally nearly choked because it was so hot. And like, so yeah, I would say this whole world was inspired probably by my travels, I reckon.
That is so cool that you've traveled so much and you used those experiences to put into this book. That's so exciting. And I actually went to your website and I downloaded the map, which people can do that. They can go and download your map for free. And it's really cool to see how you laid it out. Did you hire someone to create that map for you, or had you drawn like a mock-up or anything like that?
It's so interesting how that happened. Basically, my mom is an illustrator. And so I was like, Mom, here's a really shitty drawing. Yeah. And so she helped me. And so the buildings, I don't know which version you've got, because she did a version. And then we've actually, I've had it redone by the same guy who did the Caraval maps, or the V.E. Schwab's London, Red London maps. He did those as well. So I've got a second map, which is coming out in Trey, which is of Obex, which is the other place. And yeah, so we sort of did this really terrible drawing, and I didn't really know what I was doing in the first version, and so it wasn't the right ratio or perspectives, and so it went in the book. And then I was like, I think I need to have this professionally done. So yeah, he then lifted the buildings that my mum had drawn and recreated the island and the map on the correct like ratio, and sort of added everything back in. So it's sort of like a mishmash of what we did and what he's done. Yeah.
Oh, that is very cool. I'll have to get my hands on, because I think I have the older version, because it's all a little bit more clustered. So I think the proportions, it sounds like I have the older version. So once the new one comes out, I'll have to go and grab that one just to like do side-by-side comparison. That's so fun. Oh yeah. Maps are one of my favorite things when I open a book, is to see the map of where I am. That way I can put myself into the story and figure out what direction everybody's going in. I think it really helps with the storytelling in itself. And something else that you have within this book is an actual glossary of everything that they need to know, the reader needs to know within the story, which I really liked. So tell us a little bit, if you can remember all the things on there. You don't have to remember all of them. But what was the purpose of the glossary?
I think, like I said earlier on, because I put so much into the world, one of the things my editor said is there's a lot of world in here. And so it kind of came from her, I think. I just figured that it might help people. And the other thing that I do in the book is and this is in Victor and is in Trey as well, so it's right throughout the series, at the top of every single chapter is a little quote, a little excerpt, a snippet. And it's world building for cheaters, essentially, because you can tell the reader stuff like about the laws or the systems, or, you know, excerpt from the Journal of Dryadic Magic or what, like healing or whatever, you know. So like I put in little bits of world building there so that I don't have to then put it in the story and tell it, like, so didn't want to info dump it. And so those things combined with the, what's it called? The glossary. I kind of did just to help readers out. It was essentially to help readers out. That's kind of why I did it. Yeah. But the quote things I really, really like, that's one of my favorite little like extras. I love authors that do these random extra things. Like some people don't like it, but I really like it when people do.
No, I really like it. And I read through the glossary before I read the book, because it's in the very beginning. And so I'm reading through and I'm like, okay, like I understood it to a point, but you need to really be in the world to understand everything. So then as I was reading, I would go back to the glossary and be like, okay, now I'm connecting all the dots. And it did. It helped with understanding the story and the different types of magical powers that people have, because there are keepers. Obviously, the title is keepers, and they're basically these magical human-esque people. And there's different categories. And so all of those categories are laid out. And I actually was going to talk to you about the little snippets on the beginning of all the chapters too, because I used those to kind of figure out, okay, what's going to happen in this chapter. It was almost like a little bit of foreshadowing.
It was. Yeah. But not everybody realizes that. Yeah. Not everybody realizes that. But it's very, very intentional. Like I very, very much picked and chose, like, and there are some where I will drop it 3 or 4 chapters before and then it becomes relevant. And I do that on purpose as well, because I'm like, some things are fine to allude to in the chapter and other things, like, I want to drop breadcrumbs like earlier in the book. But yeah, so I do, that is very intentional. So I love that you picked that up.
I love that. And now everybody who listens to this and goes and buys your book, they'll have a little insight to really pay attention.
Yeah.
Pay attention to it. Okay. So there's a lot of characters within this book. And I think adding all these characters in, I'm hoping that most of them travel through to the rest of the books. But our main character is Eden, and she is Eden East. She's the main person. It's from her perspective. But we have a lot of characters within the book. We can't talk about all of them. So tell our listeners, who is your favorite character, or who is your favorite character to write?
So my two favorites are Cato and Hamia. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that both of them really came to life the further the series came on. And I think you see these hints of who they are in Keepers, but they really start to come to life in Victor and really, really come to life in Trey. And part of that is about my learning and development and being able to create better characters and go deeper. And part of it is because the seed was already there. So like Cato is so fun because I like to think of Cato as my gay best friend who isn't gay. Like he is such a diva and such a like sass queen, and he's a genius, like literal genius. And so I just love, I loved pairing somebody who was like frighteningly clever with a little bit of ego and also a boatload of like sass diva, like banter, and that kind of comes in Victor as well. And then Hamia is this very angry, very drunk elf who swears, drinks and punches things, and is this tracker, which you, I don't think you find that out. It's not really a spoiler at all. That's just what her job is. Mm-hmm. But she's a tracker, and you sort of get to see a bit more of that in Victor and even more in Trey. And I actually started writing some like side stories on like her origin story, because there is something which I won't give away because that is a spoiler, about how she's connected to the wider story. And I started writing it, and I don't know whether or not I might finish it and give it away as like an extra reader story. But she's just so angry and cross about everything all the time, and it's so fun. Like she can just say whatever she wants, like everything is an inconvenience for her, and it's just kind of fun to write these grumpy characters. So yeah,
I really liked her too. She was one of my favorites because she just has so much attitude, and I'm excited to see where she goes in the story as well. I also liked Bo, who is Eden's best friend.
Everyone likes Bo.
I really liked her. She was fun. I mean, I want to dive into all of them, but we just don't have time. But I'm excited to see where the characters go within Victor, and then book 3, Trey, which will be out this spring. So tell us kind of the backstory of how these books came about. Like the Keepers was published November 2017, Victor in 2018. And now we've got a little bit of a break there. So tell our listeners the reason behind all that.
Okay, so yeah, it is a painful story. Basically, Keepers and Victor were written quite quick, one after the other. And I really struggled to write Victor because I put this pressure on myself to make sure that Victor was better than Keepers. And I think it is a better book, of course, because I was a better writer, because every subsequent book we write, we get better. Mm-hmm. But then basically, I think 3 things happened. The first one is that I decided to split Trey. So it's written from 2 characters' perspectives, Eden and Trey. And that made it harder, and I'd never done it before. So that made things trickier in terms of matching timelines. The second thing that happened is that although I kind of knew the overarching story, what I wanted to happen in the end, I hadn't really planned out the series. And even though I sit somewhere between plotter and, you know, free writing,
I think I lean slightly more on the planning side. And so because I hadn't planned, I had written myself into a few corners that I needed to get out of. And it took me quite a while to work out how to do that. So that was the second thing that happened. And then I had a reader turn around and say to me that they read my fiction to judge it against my nonfiction. Ooh. So the lessons that I was preaching, yeah, in my nonfiction, how was I putting that into my fiction? And I didn't write for, I think, 2 or 3 months at all, not one word after that, mm-hmm. Because it really cut to my core. Like it just ruined me hearing that. And so it took me a really long time, and I've had to have like coaching and stuff to like really work out like what it was that caused such a problem about that, because of course we're going to be judged. Like that is, you know, you put something creative out in the world, you are making yourself vulnerable. And so, yeah, I've had to do like a lot of work mentally to really bring myself back. But yeah, finally I'm like there now. And I think I got the first full draft completed last year. So then I let it rest and I wrote side characters. I think I published The Anatomy of Prose and then I wrote side characters. So that kind of took up quite a bit of time. And now I have decided to end the series where it is because I want to go in a new direction. And so I'm doing the final edit. Like I'm literally about, I don't know, like 15% of the way through this final edit. I'm trying to get it done this month. Yeah. And I have, I think, about 4 or 5 chapters to add on to the end and a few little bits to sweep through the middle. Yeah. And then it's going to be done finally after all of these years.
And so it's really a great time for people to find this series then, because they'll have time to read Keepers, read Victor, and then Trey will be out this spring. So it's really a great time for you to be on the show, and hopefully people will find the series and be able to go through it pretty quick now that it's almost done. Yeah. So what is this new direction that you're going in? Where are you heading?
So I am going to continue with young adult books. Mm-hmm. But basically, I feel so naive that I didn't really work this out. But like you, I'm a prolific reader. So I'm like knocking on 100 books read this year. And I started reading more diverse books. So first of all, mm-hmm. I was reading books by people of color. I am also mixed race. And so I was like, oh, like I really like this. Like, what is this? Like, why am I enjoying this so much? And then I started reading LGBT books. So I married a woman. I try not to define my sexuality, but yeah, I married a woman. And so we have a child. And so we have this very diverse family. And so I started reading these young adult LGBT books. And every time I read an LGBT, like lesbian or bi book, I had these really quite strong emotional reactions to the mm-hmm. stories. And I was like, what is this? Like, what is going on? Like, I would find myself crying or shipping the couple or whatever. And it wasn't until I stepped back and kind of thought, oh, like, I haven't done that over a book in ages. Like, what is going on? And I literally think because I am seeing my life, I am represented in these books, like I have a stronger connection. And I feel so dumb that I didn't really notice that would be a thing. And so of course, like the series that I've written, like the Keeper series does have a male female romance in there. There are some like LGBT characters as you go through the series, but broadly speaking, like I wrote a straight romance young adult book, and now I don't want to do that anymore. Like I feel like I've been freed and I found this piece of me that was missing that I really want. And so I'm working on a book called The Scent of Death, which is a young adult, more contemporary than fantasy, kind of contemporary backwards romance, I would say. It's like a bittersweet young adult book, but it's LGBT. And I haven't been this happy writing for a really long time. And I actually think that subconsciously, that might have been one of the things stopping me with Trey as well, because mm-hmm. I knew that deep down, I didn't really want to be writing this type of story anymore. So yeah, it's been quite a journey. And I am super excited to go on this, like in this new direction.
That's so exciting that you have found what makes you happy. And I'm so excited to see what comes out in the future from you, because I'm going to be reading everything. But that's exciting. And yeah, it takes some time to figure out like our niches. Like I have a post-apocalyptic sci-fi series right now, but I know after this series is done, I'm going to be traveling into the fantasy world. That's where I think my home is. And so, but yeah, it just takes some time and it takes books. You have to write the books and figure out what you want to be writing. So that's really exciting that you found that. So do you have a timeline of when that new book is going to be coming out, or is it still just in the works?
It's a difficult one to answer. So it's either going to be out next year or it won't be. And it's basically because I have an agent now dealing with sub rights for me. I have some things going on in the background that I can't really talk about. There has been the suggestion that they might want to see this book. I mean, they might see it and hate it and not want to do anything with it. And that's their prerogative. It's completely fine. They might see it and like it and want to do something with it. And I might not want them to do anything right. with it. So it's really difficult. Like, maybe it will get queried. I don't know. Maybe I don't want it to. Maybe I do. I don't know until I've written it and I know where I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't we'll know see. Is the answer. Yeah. We will see.
We'll see.
I would like to think next year, but we don't know. I don't know is the answer.
Well, speaking of going traditional versus self-published, you've self-published all of your work so far. What was your decision behind that? Why did you decide, okay, self-publishing versus the traditional?
It was quite an easy decision for me. I don't feel like it's an either or. I've never really felt like it's an either or. I am quite vehemently indie, but I am looking at sub rights. So, you know, foreign translations, audiobook rights, all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, I wanted to keep control. That's the first thing. The second thing was I had a very clear vision of what I wanted to do with the books. The third thing is series books do earn more for indies. Like when you write standalones, it's much easier to go trad because they tend to pick standalones or, you know, it's quite rare, especially in today's climate, that they will pick up a 6-book series off of a brand new debut author. And that's another reason why The Scent of Death is the kind of book that could be queried, because it is a standalone story. So and then there's the more business reasoning and decision. So, you know, for a $4.99 ebook, as a traditionally published author, you'll, if you're lucky, you will get 10%. If you're not lucky, you might get 6%. You know, so let's say 10%. Well, that's 49 cents. And then you've got to pay 15% to your agent. So you're looking at like 45p per copy. Whereas as an indie author on a $4.99 book, I'm going to earn anything between, depending on the country it's sold in, $2.70 and $3.40, I would say. So, you know, yes, okay, you have to do a lot more on the marketing side, but this day and age, you know, trad publishers expect you to do a lot of the marketing anyway, and it's a lot harder to get return on your investment. So thus far, it felt like the right business decision to me to go indie, because I was happy to do the learning around the marketing and the building a platform. But that said, I still think there are reasons to go trad. So like, I don't mind admitting one day I'd love to be good enough to win an award. And that is a lot easier to do if you go trad. And so there are certain, and like I say, The Scent of Death is a standalone book in a niche that's hot right now. So that would be much easier to be picked up. So, yeah, I think depending on what your goals are, depends on what you do with each book. I don't think it has to be an either or decision. I think the best, smartest, most the people with the smartest business brain don't do either or. They make a decision on a case by case basis.
Right. Going hybrid, doing a little bit of both. And there's so many authors who we just had a guest on last month, Kaya Carrington Russell, and she's actually just announced that she's going to a traditional publisher for one of her new books. And we talked about it in the interview. Once you have a backlist of a bunch of books, it's really smart financially to go traditional, because then once those readers pick up that traditional book, they're going to read your whole backlist, because readers are so dedicated to authors individually. So that's really exciting. And I think a lot of listeners will get a lot out of what you just said, comparing the two. Okay, so this wouldn't be Read It With Whiskey without talking a little bit about whiskey. So Sasha, what whiskey is your favorite to drink?
I would say I'm really boring. So probably like Jameson's, which I like on the rocks with, I know, and this is probably sacrilege to say this, but like with Canada Dry. I don't know if you guys have Canada Dry over there, but I quite like a Jameson's on the rocks with a little bit of Canada Dry in there. Yeah.
I love it. Yep. Stick to what you like. I like it.
Yeah.
So tell our listeners, first tell us a little bit about your podcast and plug that, and then go ahead and tell us where they can find you and where they can find your books.
Okay, so I am the host of the Rebel Author podcast. It airs weekly on Wednesdays, and there's occasionally little bonus episodes as well. And it's very much a podcast for the cheekier, more sarcastic, rebellious writer and creative. And I try and bring on guests that cover everything from craft to publishing to marketing, mindset, and everything in between. Yeah, so you can find me on any podcatcher. You can find my website at sashablack.co.uk, and that's Sasha with a C, so S-A-C-H-A. Yeah, I am most active, I would say, on Instagram, and I'm at Sasha Black Author on Instagram.
Awesome. Oh, well, it's been so much fun to talk with you. I'm so glad to have you on the show, and just thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you.
With Sasha was so much fun. She is a hoot. I love her. I love her podcast, the Rebel Author Podcast. Definitely go check it out. It gives great tips and tricks for authors, and it's just really fun to listen to her talk. I love her voice. So definitely dive into Keepers. And as promised at the beginning of this episode, I would give you an update for her third book in the series. So these are the Eden East young adult fantasy novels, and book one is Keepers, book two is Victor, and we talked about book three, Trey. The final publication date has not been announced yet. However, as soon as I find out when Trey will be available, I will give you an update here on the Read It With Whiskey podcast, so definitely stay tuned. I cannot believe it's the end of December, and the next episode on Read It With Whiskey is actually going to be our premiere episode for 2022, and that is going to be with Suzette Arellano, the author of The New Dawn. This is a really fun story, you guys. I'm really excited to break in the new year with Suzette. We had so much fun talking. But until then, make sure you go and grab Keepers and Victor to prepare to read Trey, book three of Sasha Black's series. I absolutely love this series, so definitely dive in while you can before book three is out. And I will see you next time with Suzette. You've been listening to an episode of Read It With Whiskey. I am your host, Laura Gentinen, and I just wanted to personally hop in and say thank you so much for listening. Your support of the podcast means so much to me, and I would really appreciate it if you could go onto your favorite podcast platform and rate and review the show. By rating the show, you're going to help more people find the podcast so then we can grow. Once you review the show, share it on your social media, share your favorite episode with your friends, and come back next time to hear more from self-published authors. I'll talk to you soon.